Welcome to tonight's special council meeting. Is it agreed that consent be given for the official photographers to take photographs during the proceedings?
Yes.
Thank you. Could I please ask all members to switch their phones to silent for the duration of the meeting? Please could I also remind you to turn on your microphones when speaking for recording purposes. Fire safety instructions. If the fire alarm sounds, either continuously or intermittently, I will halt the meeting. Please leave the meeting in an orderly fashion by the nearest exit, which is in the lift lobby and down the stairs. Do not use the lifts. Do not stay behind to collect personal belongings. Fire evacuation officers will direct you to the assembly point, which is in Shortlands Road. And for those that cannot use the stairs, fire evacuation officers will escort you to a refuge area where you will await further information. Evacuation chairs and trained operatives are available should an evacuation of all areas become necessary. Thank you. Item one, apologies for absence. Are there any apologies for absence?
Madam Mayor, apologies have been received from Councillors Sue Fenimore and David Morton. Apologies for lateness have been received from Councillor McMillan.
Thank you.
Apologies for absence from Councillor Thorley, please.
Thank you. Declarations of interest, item two. Are there any declarations of interest? No, thank you. Item three, honorary freedom of the borough. It is with great pleasure that I welcome Mr. Michael Mansfield, QC, Dr. Stephen Hurst, Dr. John Lister, Ms. Merrill Hammer, Jim Greeley, and members of their family, friends, and well-wishers to this meeting. I call upon the leader, Councillor Cowan, to formally move the report and recommendations.
Formally moved.
Thank you. I call upon the leader, Councillor Stephen Cowan, to make a speech. Please note that he will be making a speech to cover the six recipients. Therefore, I will be extending the duration of the speech beyond 5 minutes. Thank you.
Madam Mayor, I think when we come to review 2019 and indeed the period between 2019 and prior to that 2012, then one issue will stand out more than anything else that affected the borough. And that issue was the future of the NHS and healthcare in the borough via Charing Cross Hospital. And as we know, and I and other colleagues were on the select committee that witnessed the putting together of the dreadful plan that was going to lead to the demolition of Charing Cross Hospital, the approach taken by the government health chiefs throughout was one similar to a steamroller. They put together the plan, they said it was a comprehensive plan, and they announced it almost as a fait accompli when it was signed off by the Secretary of State in 2013. And that plan involved the biggest hospital closure programme in London's history. At its heart, it was my view, and the view of Councillor Vaughan, who was also with me on the Select Committee, that there were fundamental flaws in how it was put together, the evidence base relied on, that would lead to a serious endangerment of life for people across this part of London, not just in this borough. Now, I was very grateful to find myself and my colleagues in a position to do something about that when the public elected us on a mandate of doing our best to save Charing Cross Hospital in 2014. And we were lucky. We were lucky to have possibly the most well-organised community campaign that I've ever seen any time in this borough. And when I tell others about it, they react with awe and pride and a little bit of envy. And that campaign included many people, as my colleague Ben Coleman, the Cabinet Member for Adult Social Care and Health, will detail in his speech. but it was led throughout by three people who are getting the award tonight. And I'll talk a little bit about them when we come on to the specific aspects of it. But without Andrew Ingle and Merrill Hammer and Jim Greeley's leadership, and without everybody else that was on this campaign, then I have no doubt that the public's understanding of the complex matters around shaping a healthier future would never have got beyond a select few. And it got there, and it was understood. And the complexity behind the plan was completely appreciated, because no matter what the weather, sometimes hail, sometimes bright sunshine, often, because it's Britain, rain, those volunteers, those residents, those unpaid citizens were out there fighting for a belief in our National Health Service based around Charing Cross. So without them, I'm absolutely sure that that domino effect of events that led to us saving Charing Cross would never have occurred. But they did seed the information, and along with my own colleagues' campaign, we were able to let people know what was going on with their NHS. And so that was stage one. And it never stopped, and indeed they're still fighting now. But stage two, given that the government health chiefs, when we had interviewed them throughout the many select committees, had said consistently that in order to defeat Shaping Healthier Future, which was the plan signed off by the Secretary of State in 2013, we had to come forward with a very comprehensive alternative approach. Now, how do you get that when all the forces of the NHS and the Department of Health had been used to put together a plan and all the legal backing that was likely to be opposed to us as we sought to defend our hospital? Well, I'll tell you the answer that came to my head, and it was two words. And it was Michael Mansfield. And those words inspire hope to anybody finds themselves the little guy facing the big guy. Whether it was Stephen Lawrence's family in that dark days, struggling for answers but unable to get them from the system, or whether it was the family of the Birmingham Six and the Guildford Four, or whether it was the family of Jean-Charles Menendez, or whether it was the citizens of Hammersmith and Fulham. Michael has spent his life as the most fearsome legislator and lawyer, defending always the little guy, and won time after time. And in the process of that, not even did he push our country into a better place on a wide range of many issues, but he changed our country for the better. Fundamentally irreversible on many, many issues. So it was a delight when Michael agreed to chair what later became the Michael Mansfield Independent Healthcare Commission. A public inquiry by any other name. We were very fortunate to have John Lister, who is one of the great experts in healthcare. He's written books, and he knows what he's talking about. And he was able, having had a lifetime of fighting for the NHS and many other causes, to give us the intellectual ballast on the approach necessary to take on this NHS hospital closure programme. And the final addition was Stephen Hurst, who is a lifelong GP. And if you know people who go into medicine, and all of us in this chamber will know many, and all of us at some point in our life will have been treated by doctors and have our loved ones' lives improved and sometimes saved by doctors, that I think it's fair to say that I've never met a doctor who did not go into medicine for the most ethical of reasons. So it would be fine for any doctor to say that's my bit after a lifetime serving the NHS. But Stephen wanted to do more. And he didn't come at it from any partisan position. He wanted to come at this problem as an evidence, from an evidence-based position. And it was his local knowledge and his expertise as a GP that created that fearsome operation of the Michael Mansfield Commission. And it was brilliantly chaired. I went to the first and many others of them. But that first moment, when I walked into the council chamber, and there was Michael sitting at the head as if the council chamber had been magically transformed into a court, and either side were John and Stephen, both listening and writing down evidence, Katie Renison prosecuting a series of questions to people who were prepared to give their point of view, sometimes with no expertise but personal experience, but an awful lot of time with vast amounts of medical expertise and organisational change expertise. The Mansfield Commission carried out hearings, not just in Hammersmith and Fulham, but in all the other boroughs listed on the front of this document. So it went to Brent, and it listened to people there, and it carried out a court, and Katie cross-examined the witnesses, and views were formed. And Marcia, behind, as part of that team, we were very lucky that Marcia Willis-Stewart was doing an awful lot of the work to make sure that those were exactly the right questions and that the right answers were going to be found out. So Brent, Ealing, Hammersmith and Fulham, Harrow and Hounslow councils came together. Now, I remember how they came together. I went and presented to each and every one of them. I phoned them up, asked them to join, and persuaded them to come forward and be part of this commission. But together, the five councils behind this scheme, that was a formidable number of councils, and it represented a population almost the size of Wales. A very, very strong alliance of people who were willing to examine the facts and get to the right conclusion. And that's exactly what Michael did. And what they concluded, in short, was that there was insufficient evidence. Even if the government was right, it could cut all our hospitals, leaving just a handful behind, from 9 to 5. Even if it was right, then it hadn't provided significant amounts of evidence to make that case, and therefore needed to come forward with a business plan. And that's where the health chiefs got themselves into trouble. Because guess what? This document was so thorough that it provided an excellent basis of a legal case. So the health chiefs faced a quandary. If they brought a business plan forward and it wasn't sufficient, we could legally challenge. And indeed, we could take it through our commission. But if they didn't bring one forward, then they couldn't implement the plan. So Councillor Vaughan and I sat in the select committee after this had been published, and every 3 months the health chiefs would come and tell us what they were going to do. And it always involved, in 3 months' time, we will deliver you a business case that shows you how we will deliver the Shape, Shape Your Healthier Teaching Plan. And it's not, and shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, that business case never came. There was a very delicate moment in 2017 when we were threatened that we would not get any adult social care money if we didn't sign the sustainability and transformation plan that the government had offered up, which was essentially the business planning process for shaping a healthier future. And I remember those 3 days, it was an awful lot of pressure, lots of people wanted us to sign, and lots of people were sincerely worried about what was going to happen to West London's healthcare if we didn't sign. But when we read the sustainability and the STP, as it became known, its Sustainability and Transformation Programme, it listed the closure of Charing Cross Hospital. It was little short of a Trojan horse designing to bounce us in the most crude political manner into agreeing to close our hospital. So we didn't sign it. And we were attacked for not signing it. People were shocked we hadn't signed it. But we didn't sign it. And Ealing didn't sign it, and we felt confident not to sign it, not just because we had this report, but we had the solid advice of the whole of the, what was called then the Save Our Hospitals campaign, and we had strong advice from particularly Anne and Merrill and Jim. That was a very important moment. Because once that hadn't been signed, the government's next plan was to delay the hospital closure from 2019 and move it to 2021. Fareeb offered me a deal. Did I really want to save the hospital, or was I just doing it for political reasons? And when I explained to some of the health chiefs, I was quite sincere, I wanted to save the hospital, you should have seen the amazement on their faces. We were very sincere about saving the hospital. So we delayed it to 2021, then we delayed it to 2025. The moment they start talking about delaying the implementation plan, signed off by the Secretary of State in 2013, but put together in 2011 and 2012, in the late part of the decade we've just entered, it became unsustainable and the government capitulated. And that's the story of how Charing Cross was saved. A story of people coming together. Now, we faced an awful lot of opposition throughout that period. We had people saying we were lying, the hospital wasn't being closed. I've still got the tweets. I think we've published them. We had people saying we shouldn't have picked Michael because he was too associated with left-wing politics. It would have been better to get someone else. We had people saying all sorts of ridiculous things throughout. And at the very end, those same people then said, now we realise it's politically toxic. We too want to save Charing Cross Hospital. And I think we all know exactly who we're talking about in those circumstances. But it didn't matter, because we were the administration, and we were in charge, and we were making decisions with our residents. And so today, we get a chance to say thank you. Not just to the individuals we're talking about, and we watch Michael with awe as his next campaign is to represent the families faced by Grenfell. The worst housing disaster in our lifetimes. People again without a voice, but again step forward, Marcia and Katie and Michael. That's the people, that's the quality of the people who saved our hospital. With Merrill and Jim and everybody else who was part of that campaign. And Ben will go through the list of how everybody worked together from the Save Our Hospitals campaign and from the Commission and indeed from the Council to deliver this result. But I want to put some context in here. We don't often give freedom of the borough. It is the highest honour we can bestow. The very highest honour. We gave it to George Cohen. We gave it to some very brave soldiers. We gave it to Mike Cartwright. And we're giving it to the people who saved our hospital. And so with this honour, we don't just say thank you to the people who volunteered to save our hospital, who put in the hours, who did the work, who made the change. We say thank you on behalf of all the residents. And I know the residents agree with us, because even now when I walk around the borough, I see a big heart in an awful lot of windows. And it has written into that heart, Charing Cross Hospital. People have put that into their windows because it's our NHS. It cares for us and our loved ones, and we want it to do that forever after. So on behalf of this administration, a very sincere thank you, which I know, sincerely, comes from every single resident in this borough, now and going forward. Now, when we think about it in the abstract, and when we think about it when we're checking into the hospital. When we pass on the bus and watch people drifting in and drifting out, and we meet the doctors rushing around, and we see the nurses going in to do their heroic work, it's still there, serving our borough, because of the work that you did and the people you worked with. So this honour to saving our hospitals and saving our NHS goes to everyone involved in this campaign. And the honour for the commissioners is thank you for giving us the most solid piece of work that gave us this fantastic result. Councillors, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the people who saved Charing Cross Hospital.
Thank you. I call upon Councillors Ben Coleman, Rory Vaughan, Patricia Quigley and Councillor Andrew Brown to speak. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Mayor. Follow that. I'm very honoured to have the chance, as the Cabinet Member for Health and Adult Social Care, to express the borough's gratitude to the six people who were absolutely at the heart, along with others I'd like to mention, in saving Charing Cross Hospital. We had the intellectual, legal, irrefutable underpinning of the battle led by Michael Mansfield and Stephen Hurst and John Lister, without which we wouldn't have had the very clear challenges and problems and impossibility of ever achieving a successful, healthy borough if the hospital closure went ahead, set out as starkly as it was. And the fact that we have Merrill and Anne and Jim also to thank from what was then Save Our Hospitals is exactly as it should be. And I'd like, Stephen mentioned, I'd like also to take the opportunity to mention a lot of other people by name who were part of the Save Our Hospital battle to keep Charing Cross going. And you may remember, many of you were there, that we had a civic awards ceremony. We're now doing an awards ceremony every year to celebrate all the fantastic people in our borough who do things just because they're good things to do. And we had a civic awards ceremony on the 14th of June last year, and we were very, very honoured then to be able to give the civic award for outstanding contribution to the life of borough, up to the borough, to each of 21 amazing campaigners from Spurs Save Our Hospitals group. And obviously spearheading the campaign, Merrill, Anne and Jim, but also, and many of these people are here tonight, and I'd just like to run through the names because they are so important to all of us and the health of the borough. Gloria Wildman, Mick Jupp, Eleanor Jupp, Sandra Lowe, Vivian Lukey, Una Jane Winfield, Susanna Harris, there's Julia Aradi, Swee Wildman, John Grigg, Liz Luciano, Jan Kilsby, Geraldine Monaghan, Anne Lorraine Ainscoseal, Tamara Dragadri, Francis Prideau, Patrick Barron, and Carmen Vasquez. All people who we are also, in giving this freedom and the honour to the six people here tonight, who we're also honouring. Because they, as Steve said, they campaigned in all weathers, attended meetings, critiqued documents, let residents know what was going on. They were a truly doughty group of people. And the wonderful thing is, not just have we, all together, thanks to all the people here and the ones I've mentioned, managed to save Charing Cross Hospital, but we have, as we always intended to have, the most tremendous relationship with the hospital now. And we're working very, very close with them on doing all planning and coming up and doing all sorts of things together and together with GP practices which will improve the health of borough in a way which simply I don't think was possible previously. But, sadly, and I feel I should mention this because I don't want Merrill and Jim and everyone else from what is now called Hammersmith and Fulham Save Our NHS, I don't want them to rest on their laurels. I might I'd just like to run through a couple of things which we're already working on together and which we need to keep battling. Pembridge Hospice inpatient care is threatened. The long-term future of the walk-in centre at Parsons Green is still, and I've just spoken to the CCG, is still not guaranteed. There is a threat of porting together 8 CCGs in northwest London to merge. There is going to be a new thing called an integrated care system, and just this week, the government announced that the person who is chairing the integrated care system, which will bring together the 8 CCGs, is going to be someone who is still a consultant with McKinsey, who helped to draft the Shaping a Healthier Future, which would have led to the closure of Charing Cross, who sat on the implementation group, and is now leading the ICS, the Integrated Care System, plan for this borough. So there are plenty of things to keep everyone who is not too tired of campaigning to save everything about their own interests that they love, to keep them going. And it is just fantastic for us all that we have these remarkable six people here. I know, Michael, you said you're moving out of London, but I'm trying slowly to tempt you back, but talking about the challenges ahead. And I promise you, very few meetings. But with the six people here, with their expertise and their get up and go, with the doughty campaigners that we've got all around us in the borough, I am absolutely delighted and I feel confident that we're in good hands.
And there is just one final thing I'd like to mention, if I may, Stephen. Hope you won't mind me doing this, but I've been trying to find out what exactly, besides the accolade of the borough and our gratitude, freedom of the borough means. And as I understand it, it means you have the right to drive sheep down the high street of your choice. And in the centre of my ward is perhaps the most exciting high street in the borough, which is North End Road. So can I plead with you that North End Road is your sheep driving area of choice? Otherwise, ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to put your hands together again for this amazing six people.
Councillor Vaughan.
Madam Mayor, thank you. I'm most grateful to be able to speak tonight, albeit through a gruffly voice, I'm afraid, as we confer the freedom of the borough on such worthy recipients. They've ensured, as we've already heard, that the borough has maintained one of its most vital assets, Charing Cross Hospital. But let's just recap. I think this has been covered a little bit, but the fight to retain Charing Cross took place over 7 long years. 7 years. I was Shadow Cabinet Member for Health and Vice Chair of the relevant scrutiny committee at the start of that process, and Vice Chair of the Health and Social Care PAC for 4 years. So I saw at first hand the important work done by all of those that we're honouring tonight. A crucial part, obviously, of that fight was the work of the Independent Health Commission. Michael Mansfield QC agreed to head it. He really, of course, needs no introduction. He's one of this country's leading public figures with an unparalleled campaigning record. But alongside his forensic skills, we were also lucky to have Dr. John Lister, a highly experienced health researcher and author, as Councillor Cowan has mentioned, and Dr. Stephen Hurst, a highly respected former GP with great knowledge of West London's health economy, and importantly, someone with great love for Charing Cross. Their 2015 report, which you'll have no doubt read, was a skillful exercise in public engagement and cutting analysis, and it was damning about the Shaping a Healthier Future proposals. The main recommendation was that those proposals, which had at their heart the closure of Charing Cross, needed to be halted. And Mr. Mansfield, as the chair of the commission, delivered the withering assessment that the reforms, both proposed and implemented thus far, are deeply flawed. This report provided the hard evidence demonstrating why Charing Cross should remain open. We thank each of them tonight for the report from this council. But the Charing Cross campaign, remember those 7 years, also relied on the critical campaigning done by the many, many members of the Save Our Hospitals campaign group. They have been inspirational to all of us in the tireless work they put in, as we know, week in, week out, continuing to highlight the threat to Charing Cross over those years. And in conferring the freedom of the borough on Merrill Hammer, Anne Drinkle and Jim Greeley tonight, we're celebrating the work of all of those who were involved in the campaign. But I was lucky enough during that time, as the chair of the Health and Social Care Committee, to work with them, those dedicated campaigners. They regularly came along to ask the questions they wanted health bosses to answer. And this included, on one if not many occasions, lengthy discussions of several hours where all of the detail behind the plans was unpicked. This is particularly important because the health PAC is the only body that has the power to effectively compel NHS staff to come and explain their plans. And they regularly heard from our Save Our Hospitals campaigners just how damaging the plans were. And in conjunction with Councillor Cowan, Councillor Coleman, I'm sure Councillor Quigley, tonight I'd just like to pay tribute to the leading role that Merrill, Anne and Jim played in that campaign, particularly the scrutiny that they provided at those committee meetings. Their role was absolutely key, and I was delighted when Jim agreed to join the committee as a co-optee subsequent to that. So, in closing, it gives me great pleasure tonight to be able to take the time to say thank you. Thank you to the members of the Independent Health Commission, Michael Mansfield, Dr. John Lister, Dr. Stephen Hurst, and the leading members of the Hammersmith and Fulham Save Our Hospitals campaign, Merrill, Anne and Jim. your invaluable work led to the government dropping the proposed closure of Charing Cross. We hope in some small way that this recognition shows tonight just how grateful we and the people of this borough are for all of the work that you did. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Quigley, do you wish to speak?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. First thing I want to say is thank you so much for doing everything you did. I and people in this borough and beyond owe you such a debt. Thank you. Because you just do not know what you have done. It's personally a great honour to meet Michael Mansfield. And I wanted to say thank you to him personally, because I know if I didn't, my mother would come back to haunt me and say, "You Egypt, you didn't get to thank him." She was one of your biggest fans, Michael. Because of part of my job, I get to work with Meryl, Jim and Anne on various meetings. And I was with Meryl this morning. And what I can say is, if I was an NHS boss, I would be particularly frightened if I got a Meryl with her. I saw it this morning. In fact, I questioned somebody. I thought I got a suitable answer. I was quite happy with it, actually. And then she replied, "But the devil is in the detail." So I am learning a lot from you, Mel, and thank you so much. I just also want to say, I'm not long a councillor, and the week before the election, I was actually a guest in Charing Cross Hospital. And I was sitting there plotting to escape on election night. I thought, how am I going to get out of here? I've got a grip in my hands. I was plotting and thinking, what's going to happen? I'm not going to be there on my big night. And I said to the doctors, people that know me know I have a weird sense of humour. And I said to them, "Well, if you get me better in time for Thursday, I'll save the hospital." They got me out, and in less than a year, Charing Cross Hospital is saved. So, what can I say? But seriously, it is all down to you for fighting the hard fight, for never, ever giving up, because I think day in, day out, you challenged. You didn't accept what was being told to you. And only for people like you and for the brilliant brains of Michael on the legal side, we may not have a hospital. And I know, as you can imagine, I've used hospitals all my life. Then I became a carer for my parents. My dad died in Charing Cross Hospital. So it was very important that this hospital remains open. And I just want to say thank you. And one more thing. Never be frightened to question anything that needs challenging. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Councillor Brown, do you wish to speak?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Firstly, on behalf of the Conservative Group, I would like to add my thanks and congratulations to those being honoured this evening. I appreciate the non-partisan, or the mainly non-partisan nature of the speeches this evening, and I'll continue in that refrain. Obviously, Charing Cross Hospital, as well as all the NHS services in our borough, is a huge resource and provider of healthcare for our residents, of which all of us rely. And despite the differences that the administration and the opposition have had over the detail and the presentation and the politics of this, I want to pay tribute to you as the campaigners and the commissioners for your part in making this a very happy ending to the very long-standing Charing Cross campaign. You know, I have known in my role as firstly assistant cabinet member to the to Marcus Ginn when we were in administration, and then as shadow cabinet member, and since then as deputy leader and leader of the opposition. I've seen all the trials and tribulations through, you know, Rory's Select Committee and others before that, and as well as many public meetings, as well as the commission, of which I must admit, Mr. Mansfield, you know, coming up in front of you as a very young councillor in the council chamber, I must admit, was quite a daunting experience. But I thank you for the gentlemanly way that you your colleagues cross-examined me. But I think what's most important is the way that the Save Our Hospitals campaign, in a very non-partisan way, and as many of the speakers have spoken about tonight, with utter dedication in all weathers, through endless, tiresome meetings with agendas 500 pages thick, thoroughly and to the end supported the hospital. And I want to pay particular tribute to Vivian Lukey, who was my opposite number for many years when she was a councillor, as well as to one of my fairly close neighbours, Sandra, who spoke to me on every occasion when we bumped into each other in Margravine Cemetery, or outside the hospital, or at Waitrose, or Sainsbury's, or Greyhound Road, and always wanted to tell me about what her and her colleagues were doing, as well as her antipathy towards Councillor Peter Graham. I also want to thank Rory in particular for his chairing of the select committees over the first 4 years of the Labour administration. I think he did a tremendous job in a very difficult circumstances, and I think it was good to see some cross-party agreement on at the select committee, whereas perhaps it wasn't always the case in full council. Now, there are many other people here tonight and not here tonight who deserve a huge amount of thanks for the hospital, for saving the hospital. I'm not going to be party political about this, but one thing that I do want to say, and as someone who tried to bend Secretary of State's ears at Conservative Party events and at conference and in Westminster on various occasions, there was a sea change in how Jeremy Hunt approached this issue, and you know, I like Jeremy, but I must admit he did not perhaps listen to us or to the administration or the campaigners with regard to the hospital. There was a sea change when Matt Hancock became Secretary of State, and I want to thank him for listening and making that final decision, which drew a line over the very many years of uncertainty and, you know, the very serious potential downgrading or even closure of Charing Cross Hospital, as well as his ministerial team. So in conclusion, thank you again to Andrew Inkle, to Meryl Hammer, to Jim Greeley, and of course to Michael Mansfield QC and Dr. Lister and Dr. Hurst. You know, we thoroughly support your great honour this evening, and thank you again for everything that you've done.
Thank you. Now, it's with great pleasure I ask, is the report and recommendations agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you. Now, I invite Mr. Michael Mansfield, QC, to come forward to receive the scroll and say a few words.
Wow.
you have to understand is that it takes 4 minutes for a barrister to cough, never mind speak. So, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Mayor, leader, and everyone else here. It's a fantastic honour and a privilege to be here tonight to receive. I never even dreamt of something like this, let alone the sheep across the bridge. And by the way, I do have a request. I'm getting a little on here. I brought it with me. I know you're smiling, because some of you know. My bus pass runs out. I moved out of London.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's only got another 2 weeks to run. And I thought, freedom of the borough? Why don't you give me the freedom of transport, shouldn't you? I want a motion. I want you to have a motion. I said tonight, but nobody would actually draft it tonight. Next meeting. So if you're giving the freedom of the borough, that might entitle you, for those who don't live in London, but are of a certain age. It would be a welcome thing other than the sheep. However, that's on a non-serious note. But I do want to thank very quickly, obviously, because all the names have been mentioned, but one has. But I'd like to thank Yvette, my wife, who's behind the pillar. Let's thank her for, obviously, supporting in a way that is unseen and unheard, but is magnificent. But also, obviously, my fellow panel members, I couldn't have done it without them. And in fact, I couldn't have done it without not only her and the panel members, but there's one name that hasn't been mentioned. Now, where is he hiding? Peter. Yeah. Do you know it's his birthday today? I do speak for fellow members here that he did an incredible job.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Because keeping a tally on everything that's going on and feeding us information and keeping it on track. And that is something that if he had not done what he did, we wouldn't have had this report. Absolutely certain of that. So I want to pay amazing tribute to him on his birthday. But also, the other two people who are here tonight, who I work with closely, well, three actually. Martin, my senior clerk, who also keeps me on track and makes sure I've got wearing the right socks and all that. But in addition to that is Marcia, the solicitor from Burnbos. She's here, and we work very closely. We're working together on Grenfell. And I just want to finish in a minute on a note on why we do the work we do, which is extremely important to remember why we do it and what the parameters are. So I want to say a word about that. And Katie, who was council all the way through, did a magnificent job of clarity. Everybody said, who is she, who is she? I've managed to mention her on numerous occasions because she's a stalwart in her profession and an ability to see through and succinct, not boring at all. Very difficult going through five boroughs, four boroughs, doing the same job, trying to elicit the truth. And I want to end on the eliciting the truth because, you know, of course I get criticised. I'm ready for that. Whether it's from the Daily Mail or anywhere else, about the fact, you know, I'm left of centre, well of left. I've never made a secret of that. But we're not doing that job for that reason. Marcia, Katie and myself are doing the job, and we did the job here, and I appreciate your words. We're not doing it for partisan reasons. We didn't come to this with some kind of formulaic, preconceived idea of what we're going to do. I remember the first meeting when I sat down with Steve, I said, "And you have inspired others. I've got another one coming up in West Yorkshire. I've said the same thing to them. Look, don't expect me to come here and do necessarily what you think you want. Because the first question I'm going to ask of you is, what is it you want? What do you think is fair within the confines and parameters of the National Health Service that can be provided, and what is the unfairness that is occurring, and how do you remedy it? So the question is on them. I'm not coming in with a package and saying this is what I want to do. Sometimes that's forgotten. People think that we are coming in with preconceived. We're not. And we made that very clear here, and that was accepted, that, you know, the facts will lead to a conclusion which we feel is right. And we stuck to that throughout. And because we stuck to that, it produced an answer that was, well, not quite watertight, but pretty close to it. Now, I've done it before, and Tony, he's standing up there. I did it for Lewisham. I don't say I did it, he did it. Because actually, at the root of the Lewisham Hospital inquiry, which came before yours, and no doubt the West Yorkshire one, you're part of a tradition and you may not recognise it. And I just want to say the tradition is now extremely relevant and important for all of us when democracy has been devalued, as a word. And the only way that value is put back in is through yourselves, through communities who come together and say, wait a minute, we have a facility in our community that needs to be treasured. And they come together and they fight, knowing that that facility is the core of their existence. Health, what could be closer to that? And that's what's happened in Lewisham, what happened here. I hope what will happen in West Yorkshire. But actually, internationally, you're part of a tradition of people's commissions. I've spent 4 years on one in the Middle East, another one arising out of Iran, another one in Ireland. There's a string of them where people have said, we're fed up with waiting, not for local government, but for central government to wake up, whatever colour, whatever complexion, to wake up to the needs of ordinary people. Now, the ballot box may not do it, but collectivity of spirit can make the difference. If, in fact, you employ the principles of justice, the rule of law, due diligence, all those principles that you know about, that's all we're doing, is applying those principles to, as it were, counterbalance what is sometimes oppressive and centralised government. And again, I'm not making it partisan, because it can apply to government of any complexion. But that's the important tradition which you've done, and I've been proud to be part of that, asked by communities to convey to governments, international governments, the United Nations, right through to governments here, that change can be brought about by standing firm, standing together, having a vision, and carrying it through and not being afraid to challenge the words that Councillor mentioned a minute ago. So for me tonight, sorry, I've taken a bit longer, but as you can feel, I feel very strongly about what you enable us to do, and we all feel extremely privileged to have been able to do it successfully, to have inspired others, and to have been in a sense a centrifugal force in the politics generally of humanity. Thank you very much.
To make. I have this impromptu speech written out. No. 4 points to make, which I think sum up my views. Firstly, thank you so much. This is a real honour. I've been a campaigner on the NHS for 36 years. This is the first time anything like this has happened to me. I'm really moved by it. Thank you very much indeed. Secondly, it's really important to me that the other campaigners on the ground, represented here by Merrill and Jim, and obviously Anne Drinkle, who's getting the award but can't be here, but so many other campaigners on the ground made this possible. Because without that campaign, keeping it alive, keeping it in the public eye, putting people to the sword where they could, I think without that, we would not have been able to get to the point of holding the commission and taking it forward. So again, it's really important. I do a lot of work at national level, general level. I come in and make speeches. People on the ground build the campaigns. And it's really important to me they are recognised. I'm so delighted that Merrill and Jim are here tonight to join with that. Yeah. Thirdly, let's not forget, without Hammersmith Council taking a stand, without Steve Cowan taking the lead, again, we would not be in this situation. It's really important. And I was saying to Stephen earlier, how can we get half a dozen more Hammersmiths to take a stand like this and fight for their local NHS? What a difference it would make nationally to the fight for our NHS, the fight against really ridiculous plans similar to this one that are being forced through around the country without a stand being taken by local government. I think this is really important. I'm really proud to be part of this resistance. But this came from the decision by the council to implement its manifesto of commitments to fight for the hospital. Wish more councils could do that. I wish more councils would stand on that and stand up for it and fight. Because the fourth thing I want to say is this plan collapsed because it was a rotten plan. The plan collapsed because it never added up in the first place. What we did from the commission and from the campaign, we kept pushing and pushing until it finally fell over. But the plan fell over because it was a thoroughly rotten plan. And there are so many other rotten plans out there that need to be pushed over in the same way. We've got the same people, the same management consultants around the country making these plans. They are rotten plans. They are driven through without sufficient opposition. And we're going to be seeing local populations paying the price in terms of loss of local access to services right across the country. So I'm so proud to be part of a campaign that's actually pushed one of these plans right over until the point that it's been abandoned altogether. We need more of that. Let's have more. Let's go out and have a crusade to get more councils to take the kind of stance that Hammersmith has. And thank you so much, Hammersmith, for standing so firm and making this a real fight that we can be proud of. Thank you very much.
I feel very humbled in the presence of Merrill and John, and of course Andy's not here, because somehow the shoe leather they must have worn out in doing the work they did is something I can only admire, and as I say, to repeat myself, feel very humble. It seems invidious to pick up people again, but I will mention a few people. I've told him already, to embarrass him already, to the leader of the council. But the thing about it, I've said twice before publicly that his council walks the walk, just doesn't talk the talk, and does what it says on the tin. I didn't think it was possible. I always saw government as a huge juggernaut that can't be stopped. But he did it. And he got the other councils to join in as well. So I have to say that, and perhaps it's invigorating my faith in politics. I will just mention Peter again is at the back, and he'll be shy to be mentioned, but he really is a guiding hand. And also just, not here, but Roger Steer and Sean Boyle, who were the consultants behind this. Those a little brain like myself managed to show me where to look and how to, and also how to look. And to them I say thank you. And most importantly, my wife, when she heard that I was to give, I just a little while ago I said a few words, said, don't forget to mention your wife. So I mentioned Kate, my wife, for two reasons. Firstly, because when I took someone after I retired, and I promised her that for once she'd see me at supper time when I was meant to come in, and we spent many years having the phone going when I was out at night doing night calls, but also because I would be in my study reading this stuff and coming down to Kate saying, you won't believe what I've just read, you know, that this is happening, who would listen patiently while I gave her lectures and so on. To her I say thank you. Thank you to the council and to yourself and to everybody else. Thank you.
Warned us that we would be asked to say a few words. Of course, individually, personally, I'm extraordinarily proud and overwhelmed tonight. But I'm also extraordinarily proud and overwhelmed on behalf of what was Save Our Hospitals and what is now Hudson, Hammersmith and Fulham, Save Our NHS. What an extraordinary bunch of people. When it's been said we've been out in all weathers, that's no joke, we've been out in all weathers. And for 7 years before the hospital was saved, but we've been out in all weathers since then as well, and we will continue to do so until our NHS is safe. Can I say thank you to the borough, both the council and the people of Hammersmith and Fulham. If we hadn't had the support of the people of Hammersmith and Fulham, we wouldn't be where we are now. And indeed, we wouldn't have the council that we have now, because it was campaigning for Charing Cross that led to a council that decided to join us in campaigning for Charing Cross. And for heaven's sake, we suddenly found politicians who stuck to their promises and joined us in campaigning for Charing Cross and set up the wonderful Mansfield Commission. Much has been said, so I'm not going to repeat a lot of that. Perhaps I should thank the council as well for what sounds like the right to graze my sheep. But could I, as an Australian, actually asked for a special provision. Grazing in Australia at the moment is a bit, how do I put it, thin on the ground. Could I import a few kangaroos and possibly some koala bears and plant a few gum trees and maybe graze them instead of the sheep? I'm just totally overwhelmed, but I do have to say there's one person here tonight who is part of our campaign, who was not mentioned by Ben, who should have been, who is Geraldine Monaghan, who should have been. She's been a very active supporter as well, so just to add that name to the list. It continues to be a huge collective effort, and that's the only way to think of it. I'm not here as Merrill Hammer, I'm here representing Hapsong as is. I'm sorry Anne can't be here tonight. I think that's a real shame. But Jim and I are here. We are representing, but only representing the campaign. And oh shucks, I'm lost. It's unusual, as people who know me know, I am lost for words. Just thank you all for such wonderful words tonight. And we fight on.
Charing Cross Hospital could be knocked down and people could continue to live safely. Now, one comes across strange things in life, but the absurd proposition you could close our local hospital, and indeed Ealing Hospital, which is not very far away, without shortening so many people's lives, was impossible to believe. So, Madam Mayor and Council Leader and Councillors, I'm really moved by this. Look, I came to this borough, to this country, about 40 years ago. I'm one of very many migrants who live in this borough and are very proud and pleased to do so. I came from Ireland, a place which then, as I hate to say it now, does not have a National Health Service. When I saw that you could, without being rich, you could actually get the best possible treatment for any condition that anybody might have, without being asked for your income, without being asked to pay up front, I could hardly believe it. I've worked in this borough for many years. I'm very proud watching a young lady there to say for many years, I've worked in a local school and you have the school uniform of the school I worked in from its first day until the time I retired. One of the things which got me and people like me, and thanks to very many of our colleagues from Hapsong, then to our hospital in the back street, one of the many things you do is you get into the street, you talk to people, and more particularly, you listen to people. And the listening is the key thing. And what I've heard from person after person about the part that not just the NHS, but the local hospitals have played in their lives, saving lives, making life tolerable for their parents, their partners, and their children, makes me feel that whoever signed the papers saying you could close a large, great hospital like Charing Cross safely, that person lacks the shame gene. And I'm afraid in many parts of the country, people are facing people who know accounts, who know balance sheets, would know nothing about human suffering, or more particularly, would prefer not to know anything about it. On Monday evening, with other campaigners, some of the back, Merle, myself, and others, we went to a meeting at Kensington Town Hall. And we listened to people saying how you could actually close palliative care homes in the poorest part of Hammersmith, K&C, South Brent. And it was impossible to believe that the people who'd written the papers knew anything about the pressures on families of ordinary people late in life. But when a woman sitting in front of me, a woman much younger than I, explained calmly, but with passion, it was calm and passionate, that she was suffering from an incurable cancer. She lived right beside the Pembridge hospice, and she would not be able to travel at the end of her days to down to Clapham or up to St. John's Wood, looking for the help which the facility next door was being closed for accountancy reasons. I could see the reason why so many of us get into the street week after week after week. And that's a very odd thing. One of the things is you don't spend all your life in the street. You spend a lot of time reading countless thousands of pages of written in a language which is akin to English, which is mainly telling you, you do not need help. You do not need care. You can do with fewer doctors, fewer nurses, fewer care packages. And when you read it and you say, who wrote that? What robot has put that together? And then you meet the local health officials. And I actually do mean this, there's no irony. I've noticed over 7 years that across the table, some of the time we're opponents, sometime we're antagonists, but I've seen local health officials age faster than I've aged. And I say that because they know that what they're trying to do is impossible to do with decency. And let me finish up on a certain thing. I'm Irish. I go back to what we call home pretty frequently. At the moment, the UK has got a funny reputation as being a strange country that people who don't live here find hard to understand. And people say, look, there have got to be good things there. And I say, there really is. There are good things. There are many good things. Such a mixed community as I'm proud to belong to. But institutionally, one thing is better than anything I've seen or that I know about elsewhere. And that's the National Health Service. It's the dedication of staff. It's the quality of care. It's the fact that you're asked what is wrong with you, not how much money you've got at the front door, which impels people like me to say, I would lack decency if I stopped campaigning. And Dr. Lister was dead right. Up and down the country, there are strange things being wished upon the National Health Service at the moment. And it appears to me that an elementary civic duty, an act of decency, which our campaigners, so many of us, get involved in, is we stand up for the NHS, because that is the epitome of what's the best about the country we're now sitting in. So thank you, Ben. Thank you, Peter.
Congratulations once again to everyone. That concludes the business for tonight's special council meeting.